Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Everyone's talking about the weather today, so we thought we would join in. We're obsessed with it here, but particularly when it is raining and windy and feels like February on the 20th of May. So what we're going to ask today is, how hard is it to predict the weather, and what is the science behind forecasting? And with me to answer that and more is Shane Bergen, physicist from UCD's School of Education and regular on the programme, and also Liz Walsh, who's a meteorologist and co-host of the Met Aaron podcast. You're both very welcome. You got through the rain and the wind and the storm outside anyway.
Yeah, it's certainly just a bit
so bad.
Right?
It's so bad, isn't it?
I know. It's awful.
Before we start this, what is going on today?
Well, we've got a low pressure system that the jet stream decided to spin up a little bit and bring us some wind, unseasonal wind and rain.
Yeah, it's grim. Now, we're going to do the basics here and talk about how we arrive at forecasting. Why does Ireland get so much weather? And by that, I mean so many different kinds of weather, four seasons in one day sometimes.
Well, Claire, it's all about our position on the planet, really. Like, we're this little small island on the outer edge of a large landmass, which is continental Europe. But not only that, we're at a latitude on the planet where the prevailing wind is southwesterly or westerly. So our weather is being carried in off the Atlantic a lot of the time. Now, that doesn't mean that it's always being carried off the Atlantic, because, you know, from the beast from the east, we can get weather from the east as well. But we're basically getting these air masses that are coming from different directions, and where you have air masses clashing against each other, you get weather.
Mm-hmm. And you agree with that explanation, Shane?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we get so much weather here. We don't get extremes, but we get a lot of change. Like yesterday, I was in the garden. I was in shorts and t-shirts digging holes with my dad. And today, you wouldn't go out there unless you were multi-layers of protection. And we all know that's Ireland. That's the weather in Ireland. And we are just in the right spot to get a lot of changeable weather. And the weather is just due to movement of gases in our atmosphere. We live on the surface of a planet that has a veil of gas above us. And it's because the sun heats it unevenly. There's a lot of heat at the equator and not a lot of heat at the poles. The atmosphere distributes that heat. So we get a series of highs and low pressures accordingly. And we're right smack at a kind of a sweet spot to get a lot of changeable
weather. Well, we might talk about the high and low pressure and explain to us exactly what that is and how it works. But I want to talk about the ocean first, Liz. And what difference does it make to our weather?
It makes so much difference. And the biggest difference basically is that it's a moderating influence on our weather. So it kind of keeps us in the Goldilocks zone. It doesn't get too hot and it doesn't get too cold. So, for example, like, you know, we can get temperatures above 25 to 30 degrees. That's not that common here. But temperatures below minus 5 degrees Celsius, that's not that common either. So the water around us is keeping us kind of warm-ish. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, in the summertime, you're not too hot. And in the wintertime, you're not too cold.
Can you explain to me how tea and toast explains how this all works?
Well, I just think about, the way I explain it is that, like, with water, you've got a high heat capacity. So let's think about it. You've got a hot cup of tea and a slice of toast. And maybe somebody gives you a call and you go off out of the kitchen and you're on the call with them. And you come back 10 minutes later and your toast, like, it was straight out of the toaster, it was cold. Like, it's cold now. But the tea still has some residual warmth. So what that means is that I kind of liken that to the toast is the land and the tea is the ocean or the water. So it's kind of that kind of influence.
I like that, Shane. That explains very well, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, when I think of it, if you think about the RTE presenters coming on now on the weather this evening, and they're going to talk about this depression that's over Ireland at the moment. Well, what is the depression? It's a depression in air pressure. So, you know, all those numbers and lines we see on the weather forecast, they're a chart of all the weather coming in over us. And today we're at in the middle of a low pressure, and that's coming with wind, and it's coming with frontal rain, which is different to the showers we've had in recent days. And so the job that they're doing is tracking these as they blow across the ocean toward us, where we are at the end of the Gulf Stream, but we're also in this kind of midpoint between the mixture of warm air from the south and cold air from the north. And these things get, I suppose, even more complicated by something called the jet stream, which leads to perhaps one of the most incredibly difficult parts of science, which is to predict where all of these things are going to go, how much moisture they're going to carry with them, and how much wind they might have with them.
OK, so can we focus on high and low pressure? If you were to describe what low pressure might look like, Liz, how would you do that?
Well, low pressure on a map, it can differ, but a lot of the time you'll see these circles that are tightly wound around each other. And then high pressure, the lines are further apart. They're called isobars. Mm-hmm. So it's lines of constant pressure. So with a high pressure, you're kind of looking at a lot of dry and settled weather. And that's because high pressure has basically there's enormous pressure. It's kind of, if we think about it, like from physics, right? Pressure is the weight of the air above us. OK, so a high pressure would be kind of like a heavy thing. It's under enormous pressure. So it's kind of weighing down on you. And if you think about it, the air in a high pressure, what's it doing? If it's heavy, it's squeezing out all the moisture above us. So it's like, you know, it's got this pressing down. So it can't really form clouds. So mm-hmm. you can't really get rain. Whereas low pressure is different. So what's happening is it's kind of lighter air. So lighter air is able to rise. And so you're getting a lot of vertical motion. But what happens when you kind of lift air from the surface and you're going up through the atmosphere? It's colder up at the top of the atmosphere. So what happens is it's condensing into clouds and rain. And so you're getting basically just the low pressure is able to move faster than a high pressure. And
so is that what we have today then?
Yes.
Low pressure.
Yeah.
Which is all the squalling around and everything is
vertical motion.
The wind and the rain and everything and the horrible. Is it, how untypical is it to have this kind of weather in May?
It's quite unseasonal.
Yeah.
I mean, we usually expect, you know, coming into the summer that the weather would settle down, but it's not unusual. I think, you know, of the last couple of years, I mean, I remember a few years ago we had Storm Hector, I think in June, and we had an unseasonal day last May, I believe. I remember around this time of year as well. And there was one in April, at the end of April.
Get showers this time of year, right? Because the sea is still cold, but the sun is quite warm this time of year. So you get this huge temperature difference between the sea and the land. And that causes onshore winds which build up into clouds. And that's why we get those thunderstorms.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a little bit of research for you, Claire, as always. And I learned that the largest raindrop you can get is about 6 millimetres wide. Right. And that comes in a thundercloud. Normally in Ireland, we get much smaller rain. The rain out there today is nothing close to 6 mils wide. But you can get huge raindrops and they form in the storm clouds. And those storm clouds can be kilometres high into the atmosphere. They can come with thunder and lightning that many people have experienced in the last few days. And the raindrops have to fall so much further that they accumulate with other raindrops to form into these whoppers that can kill your plants.
Because we're used to we're used to the fine rain here, aren't we?
Absolutely. The fine day, the misty day that comes in off the ocean. But you know what? This is probably going to result in me needing a Garda escort home. I think we have the perfect weather conditions in Ireland. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. Things grow here virtually all year long. Whilst maybe France or Italy have the kind of slight edge on us in terms of the heat and the sunny days, we really do have very, very good weather here.
Yeah, and it depends what you're looking for, isn't it? I mean, if you want a nice, as you say, Liz, Goldilocks type environment, that's what we have here. You mentioned the jet stream. Shane, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so the jet stream. So when you think about the air masses above us, when you're taking off in an airplane, you're going to go through cloud, and we're familiar with that kind of local level of low level weather. But then you go above it and the air behaves differently up there. And there are streams in the upper atmosphere that move very, very quickly. And one of them, they're called the jet stream, actually. And so one of them moves westerly across the Atlantic, and it can interfere with the other air masses and cause these depressions. But I suppose the most familiar thing for people with the jet stream is it takes far less time to fly home from America to Ireland than it does to fly there. And that's because of the jet stream. And so it moves very, very quickly from west to east across the Atlantic. And it really does interfere with the weather below it and causes an awful lot of our depressions.
Our problems.
Our problems, exactly.
And why do you say, Liz, it acts like a vacuum cleaner? Explain that to us.
Well, so the jet stream is there because of a temperature difference between the equator and poles. But what I mean, sometimes when a low pressure, so how low pressures spin up and become windy is that they interact with the upper air, which is the jet stream. And so the jet stream kind of, when it's in a low pressure, gets in the right position with the jet stream. It's in a kind of a developmental zone of what we call in the business, a developmental zone of the jet stream. It kind of acts like a vacuum cleaner because it's sucking the air out of the low pressure. And the low pressure has to keep on filling more air into the low pressure to kind of try and equalize. So that's what makes it spin up.
Okay.
And move faster. And basically all the isobars get really wound around it and it becomes a storm.
Okay. So it creates a vacuum and it makes it become a little bit more agitated.
It intensifies it.
Intensifies it. Okay. Why then is it warmer in the summer? I know these are very basic questions, but we don't think about them often, Shane.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe unless you're physicists. But so if you
you're thinking about them all the time.
If you go somewhere to a tropical climb, at midday, the sun is right at the highest point in the sky. And so the sun is very, very warm there and it's hitting you head on. As you move further north, the sun at noon is lower in the sky. So its intensity is hitting you more obliquely. So it's like skimming a stone across a pond as opposed to it hitting you straight on. So the sun's rays in Ireland are a little bit more oblique than they are at the equator. And that that's really the reason that it's colder up here than it is down there. But in the summer, because of the tilt of the Earth, we spend in one 24-hour rotation a lot longer in the sun. And that's why we get these wonderful long days in the summer. Like, you don't have that at the equator. So in the summer, the sun's rays are that bit stronger. We have them for longer and it heats us up and everything around us. But it can be quite extreme. So, you know, if even a bad day somewhere in tropical climes is going to feel very, very warm, but a very fine day in the north of Norway in the summertime is not going to feel that warm.
Yes.
Because the sun's rays are hitting you at an angle.
I wish I had you with me yesterday at bedtime in our house when I was asked that very question. Why is it bright when I'm going to bed? Why do I have to go to bed when it's bright? So I'm going to take a clip of that answer and play that the next time. Okay, so let's move through. Have you anything to add on why it's warmer in the summer?
I think.
Are you happy with Shane's explanation?
Yeah, he pretty much covered it.
So then, how do you?
I feel like this is the test.
It is a test. This is the ultimate test.
Well, Met Aaron are the ultimate science communicators in Ireland. You know, long before we had epidemiologists on the radio, we've always had the meteorologists coming on multiple times a day, and they're absolutely skilled science communicators, Claire. So it is a little like a test for me coming on.
Well, Mick has been in touch, and he reminds us of this one: wind and rain in May will fill the barns with corn and hay. I think Mick is trying to make us feel better about the wind and rain today.
Well, I suppose farmers do say you generally get the same amount of growth every year. So, you know, because you're looking more at climactic levels than compared to weather, right? Which is, you know, the week to week variation. But on average, things will grow as much from one year to the other. So maybe there's an element of truth that I'm always a little skeptical weather lore.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah, except that a lot of rain will play havoc with crops when it comes to the autumn time.
Oh, trying to get them out. Absolutely. Yeah. Or frosts in the early stages.
And you know your perfect weather comment already? Already it started, Shane. The perfect weather, Shane. Perfect for outdoor dining. You see, that's what we're all looking for, isn't it? Let's talk about then how scientists predict the weather. And because of what you've explained so far, we know it's quite difficult in Ireland to predict the weather because we have all of these factors at play.
Yeah, we've got a lot of change like happening. And so I think the way you have to think about predicting the weather is it's all about the initial conditions and the starting point of the weather forecast. We have to get that right in order to kind of predict ahead. But the problem is we can't get the initial starting point right because we don't have a weather station at every single molecule and layer of the atmosphere. So we can only make an approximation. of what the reality of the situation is when we're starting out. Mm-hmm. And what that happens then is, like, with the maths involved with that is you get the idea of the butterfly effect. You've probably heard about that. So what happens is you've got these small little errors that happen at the start, and then they become these big errors at the end. So in weather forecasting, the limit of the predictability of a weather forecast model is about 10 to 14 days. After that, it just, I mean, it's not, it stops being useful. Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah, the weather model, it's really about the starting point and going on from that. And then as meteorologists, then we know, we kind of look for, you know, like, is what the weather model doing? Is that doing the right thing? You know, like, you know, does the physics of what's happening make sense? Is that low pressure, you know, deepening in the right place? Like, is it in the right place, position of the jet stream? Like, you know, that kind of thing. So we'll add value that way to the model to predict ahead.
Okay. So when you hear people saying, oh, it's going to be a great summer because I saw a crow talking to a mouse at 8 o'clock in the evening. I mean, do those things really bug you?
Sadly, like, I mean, I wish it was true. I really do. But like, there are ways, like, you know, we do go forward in time with, like, you know, there's monthly forecasting, and you're wondering, like, well, she's only saying 10 to 14 days. How can we go monthly forecast? But scientists do look at general trends in the atmosphere, and they can be longer term trends. Like, you've probably heard of El Nino, La Nina.
Yes.
So these are trends that are kind of quite predictable, and they're over a longer period of time. So you can get some skill or out of the model for that. But it's kind of more, you're in that sort of case, you're kind of using an ensemble of prediction. So what I mean by that is that you've got a group of forecasts that have the same, you've started from the same point, but you're kind of looking at, like, the forecast prediction at a certain point, and you're kind of trying to pick, like, the winner of a horse race. So, like, if you know, if they're all, like, further out, if they're all looking the same, you know, if the models are all going for, like, maybe warmer, like, you know, say you've got like 50 pictures in front of you, and you know a good proportion of them, like, say 80% of them, are saying it's probably going to be warmer at this time, you can have more confidence.
Yes.
that's going to happen. But if all of the pictures are different and they're all, like, you know,
it can be just more difficult to,
it's just,
to
it
predict.
Just means that it's not predictable. It's,
and
not
that's
very,
why we need meteorologists doing it, you know, because, like, you need to know current conditions, you need the mathematical capacity to forecast, but then you need the expert to be able to interpret those, you know. So that's why the citizen weather forecaster, of which I'm one, at my weather station at home, but I can't.
Have you?
I do.
Well, I shouldn't be
my
surprised
birthday.
About
I was so happy with it. But yes, it's only one data point, and it's not very accurate. But, you know, I would defer always to the expert when it comes to these things, because it's very complicated. And so you need a team of people like Met Aaron to be able to, you know, to put their collective expert weight behind a forecast so that we know that it's trustworthy. It's not perfect, but it's trustworthy.
Well, that's good enough for us. Thank you very much, Shane Bergen and Liz Walsh. Thank you for coming in. Let's take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.